The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
Get your brooms out. The Diamondbacks have swept another team.
What?
Almost never happens. I'm Steve Zinsmeister, that's Derek Montilla, and Cody Fincher is back with
us.
Hello! Hey! He's back from vacation.
After taking a sabbatical.
Month-long
was it
vacation.
That long where it changes terms to sabbatical?
I don't know. I don't know what that is, actually.
You took as much time off as the D-backs did.
I'm going to let you sit in that one for a minute. But the Diamondbacks are hot now, winning four straight, including a three-game sweep of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Let's not talk about the fact that the Pirates are also terrible, but it's still a sweep.
Better than the D-backs.
They are the other worst team in the National League.
Coming off of one win over the Chicago Cubs and then three against the Pirates, it's kind of a weird time to be winning baseball games right before the trade deadline. And also, you know, when your team is how many games? 38
games 38 now under 500.
Under 500. That's not even back from first place in the National League. That's just 38 games under 500.
So I think they would have to win every single game between now and the end of the season to even like
to get to 500.
To 500.
Ugh.
To get within five games.
That's absolutely horrendous. And like I told Steve last week, that's the worst thing that they could do at this point is start winning a bunch of games. Now, I understand the perspective that next season starts now, right? So the last thing you want to do is have this kind of performance in the second half that they had in the first half. And then all of a sudden expect things to change randomly next season. You kind of have to start building that towards that now, especially now that they have so many guys back healthy.
If I can use an analogy, we just watched the Phoenix Suns put together arguably one of the greatest seasons in franchise history.
Correct.
When did that truly start? I would argue that it started in the bubble.
It started when they went 8-0 in the bubble and still missed out on the playoffs last season. That's how That's how good they were in the bubble, yet how far behind they were in the season as far as the standings were, that they could still go undefeated in that bubble, which was only featuring teams that could potentially qualify for the playoffs. That was the only team.
They needed to win every game and get help, and they did win every game, but they just didn't get the help.
Great.
And I don't think the D-backs are in that position at all.
No, they're not contending for a playoff.
What I don't want to happen, in my opinion, I think this team needs a full rebuild. I don't want them to go on this ridiculous winning streak and give this front office hope like, wow, when this team is actually healthy, they can actually compete, because I still don't think even when they're at their healthiest with Ketel Marte and all their guys healthy, I still don't think they're a playoff team. So, and then at that point, what are you trying to do? Just trying to put up the curtain, the veil of competing, trying to fool people that you're competing? I don't know.
I actually have an explanation for why I think that's important, and I'm going to go back to Steve's analogy about the Phoenix Suns. You don't suddenly get better, but you can turn things around quickly, right? I will say that they've given a lot of their young guys a lot of time. There's been a lot of trial by fire with some of these guys. Some of them they didn't have the patience for. Some of them have come out on top, like Pavin Smith and Josh Van Meter, who suddenly is, you know, he was a home run away from a cycle in a game that he came into in the fifth inning. So, that was an amazing performance. He went 3-for-3 with three RBIs. Even he said, I would have told you were crazy if you would have said this is how today would have gone, right? These young guys have gotten a lot of experience. Guys like Caleb Smith have really come along a lot. And I think there's things about doing all of this losing and Lovullo leaving them in there during some of those bad losses where they didn't get like immediately pulled because things started going south has built a lot of character and has taught these guys a lot about just kind of sucking it up after a mistake or once you give up a couple of runs and going back out there and still performing. Caleb Smith especially has been a guy that has both impressed me and terrified me at times. His answers about sitting on losses and how he wants it to burn inside of him really, really scare me. But I also get what he's saying. He seems very intense about it.
God, what does this guy think about when he goes home? I don't want to know.
I mean, and, you know, again, he was talking about how he was reacting to, you know, the bullpen giving up some runs after he was pulled. And he couldn't have been more apologetic about that getting seen. You know, and he was like, that was on me. I need to make sure that doesn't happen. I would never want to, upstage Lavolo or any manager or anybody. I love Lavolo and said all these nice things about Lavolo. He didn't say I love him, but he said, you know, he's.
Did he say nice things about the bullpen?
He did not. Actually, he said Brett DeGase came up to him and the, you know, apologized and said he's got him next time. And, you know, they basically hashed it out like it was no big deal. It's not. He's, you know, all of these pitchers have had bad days and they can all kind of lean on each other. I think the Diamondbacks have been, honestly, less patient with the lack of performance than I expected them to be with how bad this season has gone. Say what you will about them being competitive, they are giving these guys a chance to impress them, and there's not a lot of guys that want the ball.
To a point, but then you also have, especially in the bullpen, they have pulled the hook, so to speak, on a lot of these guys quicker than I expected.
Yes, absolutely.
Alex Young is the latest, dare I say, victim to this. He just got DFA'd, which I did not expect.
Yeah,
not seeing as how he was the only lefty in the bullpen to start the season.
The guy that still surprises me, and it happened a while ago, is Stephan Crichton, who was...
He was the closer.
He was Torrey's guy last year, and he was their closer, you're right. And he was their closer this year, I think, too, even with Joaquin Soria coming here, but... And they pulled the plug on him really early.
Yoan Lopez.
Yeah.
Who might have been the most talented reliever they had in the bullpen. He hadn't figured it out yet.
Ryan Buchter was here for a hot minute. Now he's not here anymore.
Chris Devensky was here for...
He was the closer, too.
Less than 5 minutes, but...
Well, he got injured.
He disappeared for like 2 weeks, which was weird.
He got injured and then
he got injured.
Faded away. Yeah.
I just think that they have been very... quick, but the reason why is these guys are not improving. It's not like a lot of these guys were just given one game or two games, except like Curry Mella, who got like one game and then also got sent away.
Got like one inning.
Yeah. Those are the ones that have surprised me. Based on Lavolo's responses in a lot of the losses, he just sounded frustrated with the fact that he couldn't count on guys, you know. This team was losing games in every way imaginable. It wasn't even the bullpen's fault at one point. I remember at one point the starters, who were essentially members of the bullpen, were giving up so many runs early that the Diamondbacks had to climb their way back into games and they would get close. The bullpen did an excellent job during one stretch of letting them stay in it. They just offensively couldn't get as many runs back as was put up on the starting pitching.
You talked about Caleb Smith. This is pretty much the first time in a long time that the entire rotation is healthy and back with the team.
The only guy that's really still missing is Luke Weaver. And we don't know when he's going to be back.
That's interesting. So I'll pose this question to you then, Bear. Is Luke Weaver still a part of the rotation in your mind? Seeing as how Caleb Smith has worked his way back in.
If he becomes healthy, no. I don't think so. I think they want to get a good look at Taylor Widener. And we don't really know when Weaver's going to come back at all. And you're not going to take Mad Bum or Gallen out of the rotation. Merrill Kelly's been really good this year. And Caleb Smith, since he's rejoined the rotation after being in the bullpen, has been really, really, really good. Now, if Luke Weaver's going to be a part of the rotation when he comes back healthy, I think it's because either Merrill Kelly or Caleb Smith gets traded.
Huh.
That's just what I think.
I don't disagree with anything Bear said. About a week ago, maybe, I don't know. All these days run together. I've been at a lot of baseball games.
You need to get out of Chase Field, dude.
Jack Summers from AZ Snake Pit asked about that exact question to Lavolo, and he basically asked, when Luke Weaver comes back and healthy, would you look at him as possibly being a reliever instead of a starter? Lavolo's response was, do you have cameras in my office? Because we were just talking about that.
Yeah, like, what do we
before.
Do?
Right.
Yeah. Like, we have too many healthy people. What do we do?
Well, and he was, you know.
I'm not used to this.
It was something that they were addressing, and obviously it is an option. He wasn't denying that they weren't talking about it. So him being a reliever is definitely an option. I think at this point, with what Lavolo has gone through this season, he is I don't feel like he has the same kind of attitude about being a manager and making those decisions any longer. I think everything's up for competition, and really when it comes down to it, they would take a look at what Luke Weaver was doing in like an Arizona Fall League game or some sort of minor league starts. They would see if he's showing the kind of stuff that would be better in a starting rotation than Caleb Smith, and maybe even give him that start. But if he goes in there and doesn't have a good performance, I could see the hook coming out pretty short and moving him to the bullpen.
Josh Rojas is somebody that's gotten super hot as of late. In the last 2 weeks, he's hitting .429, an OPS of 1.127. So an 1,100 OPS is pretty crazy. 15 of 35. Then he goes and dislocates his fingers, stealing second base.
And he gets injured.
Yeah. Stealing a base.
Is there anything more indicative of how the season has gone for the Diamondbacks than watching your hottest player get injured?
I still don't understand why guys don't put that oven mitt thing on when they run the bases.
Like always?
Yeah, always. Just do it.
Especially the guys who are going to steal bases.
Yeah, just do it. There's no harm to it.
It's kind of tipping your hat a little bit.
Well,
hey, I'm going to steal.
Hey, can I get that?
Well, not if everyone does it, including the catchers.
All the time.
Well, fair point.
Because you never know when, sometimes, even though I'm sure a lot of guys are told not to slide head first unless they have to, but sometimes playing baseball, that's just your instinct is sliding head first and you're stealing a base. So, anyway, I would say is why not wear that stupid mitt the whole time on both hands.
I'll personally say a great example of how this season has gone is when Cole Calhoun had to jump down and hide out of the way of a baseball.
Let's talk about that.
He's very upset about this.
I'm a little upset about that. So I was at the game on, was that Sunday?
This is why you're upset about Sunday. It. You witnessed it in person.
Yeah, because I paid to go to the game, and then all of a sudden he does this.
You know how much stuff I witness in person, Steve, that I'm mad about a lot for the last 6 days.
First of all, I just want to point out that I went to the game. I don't go to a lot of D-backs games this season, but I went to the game, and Derek didn't even have the decency to come and see me.
Why is that, Steve?
Because you were training an intern. Why we gave an intern to you makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Hey, intern, you want to sharpen your skills? Here's Derek.
Here's the guy for it.
What shirt were you wearing that day? Which one was it?
You and your crazy shirts.
His name was Austin, so I was going to go with my Stone Cold Steve Austin shirt.
You cater your shirts to the names of people you're going to be around?
So sometimes. It depends on what the situation is,
gonna be
Steve.
That's fantastic.
Going around someone named Wendy. Or peppercorn.
Oh, no, this is a baseball shirt, so I'm doing baseball stuff.
You never wear your Steve Austin shirt around me.
His name is Steve.
Come on.
It's not the same thing.
Your name's not Stone.
I'll get a stunning Steve shirt, and then I'll wear that one.
Despite Derek's not coming to see me and say hello, which was super rude because he basically lives at Chase Field. So during that play, Cole Calhoun is hitting. He grounds right down the first baseline. Anthony Rizzo picks it up and throws home. Bases are loaded. I think it was one out, if I remember right. He throws home, gets the force at home. Calhoun has to duck out of the base path because the ball is thrown right at his head. And so he ducks out of the base path. Don't blame him for that whatsoever. Catcher, I don't remember who was catching that day. It was not Wilson Contreras.
Right.
Can't remember who it was. Catches the ball. Notices Cole Calhoun decided not to run to first base and throws him out at first base.
Well, first he called time. Then he threw the ball to first base.
Okay, fair enough. Which makes it even worse because had time and you still didn't get to first
base. Well, I'll say Calhoun was very confused by the situation. He just came back from an injury. He admitted it being a bonehead play, right? He said, the first thing that went through his head was he didn't want to be the guy that has had two baseballs bounce off of his helmet while he was running on the base path. He didn't want that to be the thing he was known for. He also said that he was immediately concerned when he jumped down to the ground that he had done something to himself injury-wise.
Right.
So he kind of went to the knees and legs and made sure everything was okay.
Am I all still here?
Yeah. And again, the reason why I think a big part of that, he didn't really blame it on this, but he thought that Rizzo stepped on the bag and already got the out at first
place. He must have.
You know, and it looked like it did. There's a couple of weird things from seeing it at a higher angle from the press box because you could see he wasn't really close to first base, but he could have maybe made it there and probably still gotten a double play at another base, but I don't know.
Not home, though.
Not at home. Right.
Not at home.
Not at home. But he still would have gotten two outs and this run would have counted,
scored, yeah.
Right. But when he threw it at, you know, kind of in his direction, he wasn't really throwing it directly at Cole Calhoun. It was just, you know, a quick reaction thing, and it was close enough.
Right.
You know, that's all he saw was the ball coming his way, and he jumped down.
It had to have been a mental lapse
from
Calhoun, and it had to be, and I knew that in the moment, because part of me just wanted to be like, there they go again. The D-backs clearly don't want to win this game, But truth be told, Cole Calhoun had already made a diving play in right field.
Two of them.
And
or
then
not
he
two
made,
of them.
The second one was kind of like a, he went a long way towards the foul pole to get it.
Yeah, it was in that far right corner that usually it's just.
He was like playing defense,
triple alley over there.
He was keeping the team together defensively during that game, so you couldn't say that he didn't care or he wasn't trying to win. Of course he was trying to win.
No. He was just confused, and like you said, he the catcher calling for time confused him because he just thought everything was over. He already thought the double play was happening, so then the catcher's calling time, and he's like, if a double play, why is he calling time if a double play happened? It was just him, you know, like you said, he didn't really blame it on anything, and he, at the end of it, you know, still accused himself of just, you know, having a bonehead play, but he did have a lot of reasons for it to be the way it went, and I kind of understand it watching it the way it went down.
But I get why, myself included, and other D-backs fans looked at that and be like, wow, this team is terrible. They don't care. Because it's not the first time this season where something stupid has happened in the field. I will not forget. I can't remember who it was, but I won't forget.
You won't forget it, though.
Ildemaro Vargas in Oakland on that day game, not wearing sunglasses and losing two fly balls.
Oh, my God.
Ketel Marte and David Peralta letting balls drop in between them in the outfield. Pavin Smith and Josh Reddick in San Francisco letting a ball drop in between them in Triples Alley out in AT, or what is it called now? Oracle Park, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I don't blame fans who watch Cole Calhoun do that on the base pass, being like, wow, this is just another D-backs don't care moment, because it's not been the first time, even though it might not have been fair.
It might have just been the perfect formula of confusion to throw a guy off. Like, anybody could have done it.
He might have not known where the ball was and what was happening, just be like, what do I do?
And it would make a lot of sense if Rizzo did pick the ball up and run to first and then throw. Like, so visually, I could get it if you're Cole Calhoun. Like, you're focused on running to first base. You're not focused on what the fielder is doing, usually.
Well, we had another kind of weird play happen in the Pirates series where Eduardo Escobar led off the inning with a triple. David Peralta hit a comebacker at the pitcher. It hit the pitcher. There was a review on the play because it was a really close play at first base.
It rolled off the pitcher to the first base side of the infield toward the foul ground, too.
Yeah.
Away from kind of where Escobar was at third. He probably could have scored on that easily.
Well, and that was the thing, is there was a lot of discussion about the fact that the batter does not know when they have the stop sign put on the runner at third base. They don't relay the running signs on the base path to the batter. He's just worried about hitting.
And
Like if it's a you know, hit and run play, the batter doesn't know it. The runner does, but the batter doesn't know it, right? And so there was a kind of a heated discussion. It was a brief, and they downplayed it and said it wasn't as heated as it was. Lavallo, however, called him very passionate and said that they were, you know, there was some action going on down there in the bullpen. He said there was a lot of drama in the bullpen all night that night, because that was the same night that Caleb Smith was very angry in the bullpen, throwing water bottles about the bullpen giving up the or in the dugout about the bullpen giving up the runs. For Peralta and Escobar to exchange words in any way, I think Escobar thought Peralta was saying something about that he should have gone, and Escobar was taking some exception to it. And he said he called him over, and they just be like, hey, what was going on? And that was like this, and that was it. But he's like, oh, no, it happens in a game all the time. And I get it. They're competitive. But if you don't believe these guys still care, they're 40 games at that point below 500. And they're fighting with each other about not scoring more runs in a game that they already have the lead against the worst team in the National League. They still care. There's just a point where you can't expect them to take this baggage home with them every single night. It would drive them insane mentally. They have to still come out and have some fun. You have to see them still smiling even though they're down so much. It's just the way that you have to live life. You're playing baseball at the end of the day. You're not doing anything that's really that. I mean, even when you're in the middle of a bad losing streak, you can still smile about the fact that you're, you know, getting up in the morning and living and breathing, and you get to go play baseball and get paid all this money to do it. These guys still care about winning, and they want to win. It's just been a really bad season in every possible way. I've seen this team lose in so many different ways that I can't even put it on anything. I've seen the starting pitching lately have some pretty amazing performances. I think 8 out of 10 of the last starting pitching performances, the starting pitchers gave up 2 runs or fewer. So you can't say any longer that it's the starting pitching putting this team behind. And we've seen them giving been giving long outings. Merrill Kelly made it into the ninth the other day.
Yeah.
Caleb Smith into the seventh. So, I mean, these guys are now giving them plenty of innings. And the bullpen is getting whittled down to people Lavolo can trust. Noe Ramirez, Joe Mantiply, these are the guys that you see Lavolo counting on a lot. Joaquin Soria.
Pitched like 5 days in a row.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, and
Does he not know how old he is?
He never relented on that. I think he did hint that Noe Ramirez would be the guy to come in for a close opportunity if they had to shut Soria down. But, you know, he's had a lot of time off due to injury, and I think he's, you know, happy to be out there and happy to be getting the save opportunity.
Tyler Clippard's back.
I mean, they're getting all the pieces back. It's just too late at this point.
Except right. For Rojas, who right now is listed as day-to-day. We don't know how bad it's going to get for the dislocated finger. But
knowing Josh Rojas...
He could be back.
You know what he would say? Cut it off.
Cut off the finger?
I don't need it.
Yeah.
I've never used that.
It's only on my glove hand.
Which one was it?
It's the left
hand. Left pinky.
No,
the left
pinky. It's the pinky?
Yeah, it's the left pinky.
Do you need that one?
Well, he bats left-handed, so I don't know.
That's going to be down near. Yeah, you just get used to the ring finger now being the one that touches the knot.
They say you need your pinky toe because it's
for balance
purposes. Sure. Like if you cut it out, you just fall over.
I don't know. I've seen movies about guys cutting off their pinkies over bets.
Okay, I don't know what movies you're watching. 127 hours over there. Talking about Merrill Kelly and how great he's been. We talked last week. I recommended that maybe he's your bounce back candidate. He's been great in his last six or seven starts or so. Is he a name that maybe we see? We talked about the trade deadline is coming up on July 30th. Is he a name that gets moved? Or is there somebody more likely to get moved than him?
On this team, honestly, I think still the most likely guy to get moved is Escobar. But honestly, everyone's looking for pitching at the trade deadline. All these buyers, all these teams fighting for playoff position. You can never have enough pitching on your roster.
Well, in Escobar, there's been rumors around him getting traded to the White Sox and other teams for a long time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to have manifested in an actual deal.
Yeah.
So is that cooling down or are teams losing interest?
I don't know. But I mean, I think he's played much better than he was earlier when those rumors had started. So I would figure there's still talks going on with the Diamondbacks and other teams about Eduardo Escobar. But honestly, like out of the pitchers, I think Merrill Kelly is probably the most likely guy to get dealt because he is pitching really well for a really bad team. And you can't have enough pitching if you're going for the playoffs because guys can get hurt and anything can happen in the playoffs and in the stretch run. So, I mean, I think Merrill Kelly and even Caleb Smith, I think there's a good chance that Caleb Smith can get traded as well. I don't think it's more likely to happen than Merrill Kelly, but you never know.
Caleb Smith was also acquired a year ago.
Yes.
At last year's trade deadline in that
deal for
Starling Marte.
I don't know if they'd want to give him up already.
Because you'd be giving up on your Marte return.
Basically.
Not all of it, but the biggest piece of it.
Frias kid is probably still the prize of that trade. Is it Luis Frias, the pitcher?
I thought he was already around in the organization.
Who am I could thinking be wrong. Of?
There was Humberto Mejia.
That's it. That's who it is. Humberto Mejia.
Humberto Mejia. Yeah. He was in that deal.
That's the guy that I was thinking of. So maybe they're not so attached to Caleb Smith yet, but I don't know.
But you're probably right about Merrill Kelly. He could be a really solid four or five in a really good rotation. Like, I don't want to keep bringing up the White Sox, but they're competitive. So if the White Sox go and add Merrill Kelly, you know, obviously he's behind Lance Lynn, Lucas Giolito, Carlos Rodon.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you could add him to a rotation and feel pretty
good
about
Cease
it.
Dylan Cease
as well, yeah.
The Yankees probably might need pitching. They always need pitching.
Is anybody untouchable at this point?
Madison Bumgarner.
No, don't
because
start with
nobody
me.
Wants what? That contract.
That doesn't make him untouchable. That makes him untradeable.
That makes him not wanting to be touched.
Unacquirable, yeah.
I think Zach Gallen is probably the closest guy to being untouchable.
I would agree with that.
In the past, I would have said Ketel Marte, but at this point, I'm kind of cooling on that because he's a guy that could get you a lot in return because of just how his contract is structured still. So if a team comes in and blows you away with an offer, then you have to consider it. I wouldn't if I was Mike Hazen and company, I wouldn't say, oh, you want Ketel Marte? Click, hang up the phone. Right. I wouldn't do that anymore.
Pinky
Jack Gallen, I probably still would.
Pinky injury notwithstanding, if you got an offer for Josh Rojas, would you be open to moving Josh Rojas?
No.
I don't think so.
So you're making him untouchable. It doesn't mean the team is, but...
I guess I'm not making him untouchable, but I'm just saying there's a point where you have to start looking at the Joshes and Pavin Smith as the future.
The Joshes and the Smiths.
And the Smiths. Yeah.
And the Kellys.
And the Kellys. These are the...
There are two Kellys. I'll give you that one.
These are the...
There's Levi Kelly, too. Don't forget about him.
Yeah. These are the future of the team.
Well, there's Josh Van Meter, so I guess there are
Joshes.
That's
who he's talking about.
Wait, who's the other Smith?
Caleb. Yeah, I like Caleb Smith.
So there are multiple of these.
I think Caleb Smith is going to be a guy that continues to ascend, to be honest. That's what I think. I think he has he just has a different gear than other
guys
do.
He's got a nasty attitude. Like,
right.
Not in a bad way either. No. He's like,
I'm
going to get you out. I don't have the best. He doesn't have the best stuff, but he's like, I'm going to get you out.
Well, and he wants to do it so bad. Guys that want to do that so bad are open to coaching. They're open to getting better.
It's how pissed he was when he was moved to the bullpen, but he didn't whine and cry. He was upset about it, and he got better, and he worked his way back into the rotation.
You could tell he was asked that question about his demeanor in the bullpen, and part of the question was letting him know that Lavolo wasn't really pleased with his behavior. And his attitude turned on a dime in regards to it because he was kind of having a fun time. They'd ask him a question about stealing a base. It was his first stolen base as a major leaguer. And then next thing you know, he's getting asked about that. And like you just saw him kind of turn into, you know, kind of be a little bit introverted and instantly regret his behavior being seen the way it was. Lavolo is the kind of guy that doesn't really mind that as long as it stays contained within, you know, somewhat of a question, you know, somewhat of a reasonable amount.
As long as Bally Sports Arizona isn't zooming in on it.
Right. Well, he doesn't want the fighting. He doesn't want the arguing. He doesn't want, like...
Who would?
He doesn't want the bullpen guys coming out and then there being an issue on the bench. He doesn't want any of that.
They
you
should
know?
Fight themselves.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, there is that whole scene in Milwaukee when Torrey basically gathered the whole team in the dugout and was screaming at them.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's got to happen. Yeah.
It really does. It really does.
They've won four in a row.
I'll say with Merrill Kelly, he still has a club option for next year.
Yeah.
So I don't know with his performance. I wouldn't see them wanting to get rid of that. I think that one thing they've learned this season is how fast things can go downhill when they don't have these, you know, enough guys, when they don't have enough qualified starters. You can't sit there and constantly bring up minor leaguers that still are in their development of their career and expect them to not only fill in these gaps when you need them, but have success. It's detrimental to them as a ball player. They could literally have their entire career kind of derailed by that kind of, you know, experience turning them off from, or just, you know, having that self-doubt or whatever can come from, you know, having a really bad couple of outings as a major leaguer.
I think not having a minor league season in 2020 really hurt the Diamondbacks as an organization. Yeah. And I know that it hurts every organization. It doesn't help certainly anybody. But you look at players like Corbin Martin, J.B. Bukauskas, John Duplantier to some extent, like a bunch of guys who were pretty much ready or had played in the major leagues before 2020. And then that season happens where there is no minor leagues. There's only 2 months worth of major league games, so there's not a lot of opportunity there. And all of a sudden, those guys lose a whole year of development. I know they were still working out. I know they were over at the, what do they call it, the alternate site.
Yeah.
I know they were doing stuff, but it's not the same as playing 6 months of competitive baseball.
Not at all.
And now, all of a sudden, you get to 2021, and Corbin Martin comes up, but he only pitches, what, 1-2 outings, and then he's back down. You get Bukauskas, then he gets hurt. You get Bukauskas back, then he throws a couple, then he's down again. And there just seems to be, like, not a lot of staying power with the young guys. The guys who are staying right now, like Pavin Smith and Josh Rojas, they were already here. They were here last year.
It's because of that season. It's like you said, it's kind of like with injuries. Yes, every team has experienced injuries this season. It's been a bad season for it. But did every team experience the amount of injuries that the Diamondbacks did?
No.
Absolutely not, right? So, yes, I understand that that sounds like a cop-out or an excuse, but at some point it actually is the real reason for why they were so bad for that stretch of 3 months, you know? And I wouldn't be surprised to see people talking about how good they are lately, and again, not really bringing up the fact that they got 50% of their team back after the All-Star break. You know, it's one of those seasons that, once again, they needed to call on players that they probably wouldn't have called on just to fill in holes. I think that's why they're going to be very careful with the trade deadline and who they get rid of. I wouldn't expect to see a whole bunch of guys get moved. And in fact, I'm surprised that we've only seen two trades from this team so far. I feel like something big is looming. I think we're going to see maybe even a deal that might involve multiple players. I'm just a little worried about what the return is going to be and what the direction is going to be after that. I don't think that anybody at this point is going to take advantage of this team. There's a good chance that might be what's trying to go on right now. They might be trying to lowball the Diamondbacks because they think this is a fire sale over here and trying to get, you know, shop for bargains, and the Diamondbacks aren't really having it because they're not in a position financially to have huge losses. They're not getting Bumgarner's contract off the books. They're not getting those big contracts. So not like some of these guys that they might move aren't really going to help as much, right? Escobar is a free agent after this season, so moving him makes sense because there's a good chance he's going to leave after this season anyway. He's a very valuable commodity, and this is probably going to be his biggest, you know, contract, this next one after this season.
He said, I think it was last week I heard him on with Farron during a pregame show, and he said something to the effect of, yeah, I'm going to be a free agent, and who knows what happens? I could go elsewhere, or I could come back here. He's like, I could get traded and I could come back here. Like, it was almost, I mean, you don't see it happen very often. The best example I could think of is Zydrunas Ilgauskas got traded to the Heat and then became a free agent and went right back to the Cavaliers.
It happened with Aroldis Chapman.
Chapman.
Traded
that's a good
to the Cubs from the Yankees and then he went back to the Yankees.
Yeah. Right. So, like, Escobar is very open about all of this.
Do you guys remember a time where we all thought, hey, the D-backs are going to trade Oliver Perez? They traded him, and they're like, he's going to come back. He said he wants to come back.
Yeah,
he didn't come back.
He never came back.
I'm not upset about it.
No. Honestly, though, he was already like 45 years old at the
time.
That's
not like getting Aroldis Chapman back.
But it's a different thing with someone like Escobar. I can understand his desire to be here. He's played in Minnesota for a long time. Mm-hmm. There's a big part about being here, you know, being a Hispanic player that has to feel very much at home versus some other cities and places you might play. I think being here and being around people that he's made lifelong friendships with, like David Peralta, might be more important to him than getting an extra $5 million or whatever he might get from another team that the Diamondbacks aren't willing to match. I think the Diamondbacks are more than willing to offer him a pretty big contract and bring him back and make that stop be here. I just don't think that they might still have a very conservative financial attitude after this season. They took that approach this year. It worked out for them. You know, they could have tried to do bigger things, and yeah, maybe they could have filled these spots, but look at how this season would have gone regardless. And I don't think an extra 10 wins really would have made the difference if you brought in somebody that
there's no 10-win player even out there
that you
could have afforded anyway.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it was the worst idea for them to be fiscally conservative this year, especially when you see how empty this ballpark is that can seat up to 40,000 people but isn't, you know, surpassing 6,000 on most given nights.
Is there any trade you would like to see the Diamondbacks make? And that's not to say, like, yeah, we need to get rid of this guy. This guy sucks. But, like, is there a player that you're like, all right, feasibly, I could see that guy getting traded, and as long as it's a decent return, I'm okay with it?
I'll just say I'm in favor of the Escobar trade, and the only reason why I say that is because of the free agent status after the season. If he wants to come back here, he can. They're not going to do anything this year, so there's no need for him. Maybe he does go out and have a really special season with another team, and maybe that makes him unaffordable for the Diamondbacks, but good for him. You know, I'd like to see his success, and I think he's been a good enough player that could really shine on a different team or help that team get over the hump. I think that there's a really good chance he's going to leave after this season anyway. It's kind of like I was in favor of the Goldschmidt trade just because Goldie had made it kind of well known based on who he got as an agent and what his moves were that he was going to be leaving Arizona. So if you can get something for him, then yeah, let's do it. Carson Kelly has been a pretty decent addition to this team that we got in that trade. So I still don't hate it.
I would have to agree with Derek. The Escobar trade is probably the one I would make if I was in this front office, just because, like Derek said, he's a free agent. He might not come back. And so if you're a team like the Diamondbacks, you're the worst team in Major League Baseball, and you're obviously selling. So there's no sense in keeping Escobar or anyone else that you could trade for you could get maybe a decent return for. There's no really use to keep him for the rest of this season, because what is this season? I mean, I hate to say that they're going to give up on this season or whatever it is, but because that's just, like we talked about today, they still compete, the players still care about the games. But Escobar, I'm just looking at his stats. I remember earlier this year, like, he was hitting like 204, you know, but he was still hitting a couple homers here and there and driving in runs. He's up to 251 now, with 22 homers, 65 RBIs, OPS of 791. It's not bad. He could definitely help a contending team. And if you do trade him and he doesn't come back, whatever, but if you do trade him, you get decent prospects for him, and those prospects turn out to be good prospects, you can turn those prospects into other players when you're ready to build this team up into a contender.
Like they did with Marte, yes, Starling Marte.
Exactly. You can make those trades. You can bring in pieces. Because honestly, the way the D-backs have operated their franchise the last few years is, yeah, they have the capability of making a big splash. They spent $200 million on Zach Greinke. They gave Madison Bumgarner at 5 years, $85 million. So they've shown they will go out and get them. Now, whether it's the right move or not is another story. But most of the time, this team is going to have to be built with trades. And that's why having Mike Hazen's built such a good farm system. And he said in the past, he does not want to be known as the GM who has the best farm system all the time. Because eventually that farm system, either you need to bring those players up and they need to be your core players, or you need to send those players to other teams and get major league ready talent that can help your team win. So right now, where this team is, 38 games under 500, and we're almost a week away from the trade deadline, I would trade Eduardo Escobar and see what you get for him. But honestly, if there's no market for him, then don't trade him. But there's obviously going to be. He's a good player still.
Absolutely. His versatility on the infield, he can play second, he can play third.
Left field.
I think the biggest thing,
DH,
though,
obviously,
is, I know this is stupid, but he appeared in the All-Star game. So people know his name now. I'm not saying baseball people don't, but his name is just a bigger name because he was in the All-Star game, and he did well in the All-Star game in his limited, you know, playing time. That is something that kind of goes a long way. You're not going to have a guy on the team that has much more value than the guy with the most home runs and RBI and the guy that was in the All-Star game.
Other fan bases will look at acquiring Escobar as, okay, well, he's an All-Star?
Yeah, that was...
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, I watched him play in that game. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay.
It's that thing.
It doesn't make him a better player than he is, but...
It's all value, though.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like... It's stock, you know what I mean? It's like selling a stock when it's high. You know, sometimes it's little moves, right? Just ups and downs, but at this point, there's not too much more of a peak that Escobar can hit because of how well he's been doing as of late, combined with his All-Star appearance.
Selfishly, the move I would like to see the Diamondbacks make is to ship out Madison Bumgarner's contract.
Oh.
That's wishful thinking. I'm ready to give up. I'm ready to give up on Madison Bumgarner.
I thought you said that we were talking about realistic things.
I know.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't think that trade is out there, but if the Dodgers or the Yankees...
Oh, my God.
Yankees aren't really
Dodgers.
Competing.
Could you imagine Madison Bumgarner in a Dodger uniform?
If one of
yes,
those...
I can, actually.
Really?
Yes, I can.
What if... Hold me to this. What if the San Francisco Giants calling?
Oh.
Are they currently leading in the division?
Yeah, they're still in first place. Yeah.
What if the Giants call and say, hey...
We want our guy back.
We want our guy back. And he doesn't have to go back and be the Madison Bumgarner of the past.
No,
he just needs to be their fourth or fifth guy.
They have Kevin Gausman and Anthony DeSclafani and Alex Wood.
What if they come calling and they say, you get nothing. You know, like you get cash considerations or whatever.
We just want him back.
We'll take half the contract, and here's a couple low-level prospects.
His contract is so backloaded because they anticipated competing within the first two seasons of having Madison Bumgarner. So,
Steve,
what if the Giants say, we'll take that off of you?
As Hawkeye would say, don't give me hope.
Steve,
I'd drive him to the airport.
I'd drive him to the airport.
Okay, we'd all do it.
I'd throw in a couple of D-bat dogs while I'm at it.
We would all do that deal. Is it outlandish?
Cowboy boots, Mad Bum.
I'll give him a meatball sub from Hungry Hill and one of those.
Now you're just
enchiladas.
Being offensive.
No, I'm just. I'm saying.
Being degrading.
I'm just trying to entice them with a better deal and add anything.
Okay, we all like my plan.
I can come in.
Yeah. All right, cool.
He doesn't fit the timeline. If this was an episode of Loki, the TVA would come after him, right?
I haven't finished it yet.
He's not okay. Part, no, yeah. No, I mean, it's fine. It's just the first episode.
So he's a variant.
He's a variant.
Everyone
He's
dies.
A variant for the D-backs.
Honestly,
he
though,
really
and
is.
I'm just looking at it. I just pulled up his contract. $23 million in each year of 2022 and 2023, and then 2024, when he's 34 years old, $14 million.
He says that. Did you hear the...
Give him to the Giants.
Did you hear the thing in his voice when he said 34 years old?
Yeah, he doesn't like old people.
I don't like that.
That's okay.
I don't like
we all know you're old, Derek. Right. I'd give him to the Giants. For nothing. You get a low-level prospect back, maybe that's a plus.
They get their franchise player, basically.
Who's going to want Bumgarner more than the Giants?
That would be...
Right?
Wow.
And a bag of little bites from what's...
Okay, we get it, Derek.
Send him a Dutch Bros, too.
I'll send him a Dutch Bros.
I was wondering why Derek's putting together a going-away basket already.
I mean, I'm excited about
this.
Can
I bring up a national story
before
we
finish? Can we also throw in Rat Leon?
Yes!
Absolutely.
Bumgarner's going to show up to the airport in the Rat Leon costume riding a horse.
In the bullpen cart.
Yeah.
Which doesn't exist anymore.
It's in the upper levels.
Is it?
There is one up there.
I'm going to go drive it.
Nationally, I wanted to bring this up. This is so bizarre to me. Remember at the beginning of the season, we talked about Yermin Mercedes so much.
Oh, I have an
the Yerminator.
I have an update on that, by the way.
Okay.
What you were going to
so
say.
So here's what happened as of yesterday. Well, as you know, Yermin Mercedes kind of came out of nowhere with the Chicago White Sox this season. He's a catcher. He was an offensive juggernaut in the month of April and into May. There was the big incident with him and Tony La Russa where he hit a home run on 3-0
off a position player,
and
in
Tony
a
La Russa
game.
Complained and said, "We're going to correct that."
Yeah.
By the
and
way,
he was okay with he was okay with them hitting him and throwing at him the next game.
Do you guys remember the big deal that the Diamondbacks made about the 22-1 game against the Dodgers? No, you don't remember that because they didn't make a big deal about the Dodgers hitting home runs off of their position players
because they gave. Up.
Yeah,
well, they gave up the game.
There's a point where you got to save your bullpen.
So yesterday, I don't have it in front of me.
Get mad when someone hits a 68-mile-an-hour pitch out of the ballpark.
You were going to make up 10 runs anyway.
When Albert Pujols hits his 650 millionth home run.
Yesterday, Yermin Mercedes posted on Instagram a big old picture that just says, it's over. And he basically talked a little bit about his immaturity with the media and sorry to my family and whatever. And then just said, it's over. I'm taking time away from baseball. He didn't say forever, but...
It's over sounds pretty final.
So, to retire in the middle of the season is weird.
I have an update on this, and this happened while we were talking earlier.
Of course it did.
The White Sox say Yermin Mercedes is in uniform with the Charlotte Knights tonight and is on the active roster.
Because he's in the minors. He got sent down recently.
Correct.
I don't remember how long ago.
Correct. But they're saying he's in uniform.
They're basically restating that... Yeah. No, he's playing.
Not retired.
He's not.
Is that them trying to gain leverage over him? He's like, hey, guys, I'm out.
I don't know
it's
if
over.
He's, I don't
like,
know if he's
no.
playing. I don't know if he's playing
he's
tonight,
active.
But he's in uniform.
Is he retiring ahead of time? Like, hey, I'm going to retire?
Did you guys ever quit a job when you were like a teenager? Or anything like that?
Quit a job?
I wasn't a teenager. Well, no.
I guess when I went to college.
You weren't a teenager?
Ever? No. I was born this way.
He skipped that.
I knew you came out with that beard.
It hasn't happened. I'm Benjamin buttoning this thing here, so I eventually will be a teenager.
I'm looking forward to those
I guess I quit when I went to college, but not like quit
on bad terms or
no.
because of a job being stressful?
No.
No, I never. No. I've never quit a job like that.
I've quit a lot of jobs that way.
I know people who have.
I'm just saying, when I was younger, you know, that's the thing, is I was immature, and I had this thing where when stuff wasn't going right for me, I just felt like changing directions. No matter if I was on the path that I wanted to be, it could be a job that I totally wanted and had been, you know, kind of going after for a little while. It could have been my first job where I was cutting meat for, you know, a deli. It was just everything I did, I found something to eventually be terrible about it that made me like run away from it. And just, and a lot of times it was a lack of having good mentors. It was a lack of management not talking to me as a young person, and instead literally just being like, if you can't do this, we need to bring in somebody that can. That kind of pressure on a young person, right? That's 100-fold when you're a baseball player, especially a baseball player that had an amount of success enough to be called up to the major league roster.
He's hitting 300.
And do well on the major league roster.
When they sent him down, he was hitting 309.
In his first season, yeah. With a contending team that already has one of the best catchers in baseball.
He's probably in AAA like, what am I doing down here? This team is good, and they've gotten injured. A lot of their players have been hurt. Like, why am I in the minor leagues when I could be helping the major league roster right now?
It reminds me of fans' reaction when the Diamondbacks send down a minor leaguer or send down somebody that was doing well, right? It's more of the fact that they're not going to use him for the next 3 days. And this move, because of the way his contract is, they have that ability to send him up and down. If they could do it with everybody, yeah, there'd be five other guys that they would pick to send down rather than this guy that's been having success as of late. But it's all about contract maneuvering, timing. Yeah. They are in a race for the division, and I think it's different because I don't know, not looking at it, what the aspects of him being sent down were. Maybe they needed relief pitching help, so they brought somebody up, and at the time, they were just like, hey, we don't need to carry three catchers, perhaps. Maybe they have another guy that can play catcher besides him, and essentially they have three available catchers on the roster. I don't know. There's a lot of that stuff that goes on, and I can understand being frustrated when you're doing that well and still being sent down. La Russa has always kind of struck me as the kind of person that just tells you stuff, right? Yeah. When you see Lavolo's careful when he talks to the media because he's like, I don't want this to get out to the guy before I go talk to him. I want to go have like a sit down conversation. From my understanding, Hazen used to come down and have these conversations personally with the youngsters that they were sending back down to the minors or DFAing or whatever, just to give them some encouraging words and let them know that, hey, like, you know, we're still on your side. We still got you back.
Tony La Russa probably goes, hey, you're being sent down. Here's your flight.
Yeah, right. That's why it was laughable to me. That was why it was laughable to me that he was going to be in charge of a young, talented team like this. It's just not the direction that you go in this day and age. You look at successful teams, and a lot of them are being managed by pretty young managers that have had experience as ballplayers themselves in the major leagues.
I think this Yerminator thing was just interesting to me, too, because he'd never said, I'm calling it quits because I got sent down and because I'm a good player. He did, however, talk about his immaturity with the media. He talked about his family. So, I mean, you just don't know. Did something happen in his personal life? Does he feel overwhelmed? Is he going through some sort of breakdown where he feels like he's not being supported or appreciated? I don't know. Remember, Yoan Lopez quit baseball for a few weeks when he was in the minor leagues. He hadn't been sent back down. It's not like he had been up already. But
there was a whole other thing with that, though, and he had a
you just
police
don't know.
Incident with domestic violence and stuff. There was a whole other...
You just don't know what's going through a guy's life, what's going on in his life.
Right. You don't know mentally, you know, and I think that's sometimes the biggest thing about playing sports at a high level is it really takes a toll on you. You really get judged and criticized a lot, and sometimes you have to kind of go through it a little bit and experience it before you realize how bad it truly can be. And maybe there's just a lot of pressure. You know, maybe it's not that kind of stuff. Maybe it's just self-pressure. You just never know with athletes. I think that baseball's a trying sport. The sending up, sending down, the years of kind of going through that minor league system to find success and make it to the major leagues, only to find yourself possibly being sent back down again a year later or whatever. It's a difficult mental toll that it takes on you.
Basically, Yermin Mercedes has posted a new thing on Instagram The picture is a phoenix rising from the ashes.
And that was pretty quick.
He's
that
done.
That was a pretty quick turnaround.
He basically, I'm back, baby. I'm just reading. It's hard to read because he posted it in Spanish, and people just clicked on the C translation button, and
yeah,
it's not all great. But he basically is saying he's not going to give up on his baseball career because he owes his family and himself, and he wants to be known as a good player in the major leagues. And he apologizes if he's failed people. I can't
take away their social media accounts.
For
take
real.
All their social media accounts away.
It sounds
there
like
is
he
nothing
got
that good that comes from it.
It sounds like he just had this brash moment of like, I'm doing this for me, and then somebody sat him down and went, dude, come on.
That's what I mean.
You're like the rookie of the year.
That's the
in
maturity.
The American League.
That's the maturity. And that's what I mean, like, with some of the jobs I quit. I regretted it. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
you went
I
out in a blaze of glory and then somebody
mad.
Sat you down and said, hey, you need to not burn bridges.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't
know what I
quit
mean?
In the middle of the job. You
right.
gotta get the job done.
Right.
You gotta give your 2 weeks notice.
Exactly. You
and
gotta
then you
grow
get out.
Up and you gotta be a little adult about it.
Yeah.
You know? I had one job where the manager was so nice I couldn't tell him to his face, so I just left him a note at the front door that I quit and I left.
The most recent job, the only job I ever quit as an adult, I had to go to them and tell them, I cannot give you 2 weeks notice. I quit today. And the reason was because the job I was taking said, we need you Monday.
And
it was Friday.
That's cool. I need to start on Monday.
They said, we need you Monday full time. And I said, well, I got to give 2 weeks notice. And they said, no.
No, you don't.
No, you do not need to give them 2 weeks notice.
Do you plan on going back to that company?
So I went to the other company and I was like, I'm sorry, but I can't give you 2 weeks notice. And they're like, why? And I was like, because I don't have it. I can't work two full-time jobs.
I'm
going to
be
the
working
time.
The other job on Monday, so
yeah,
I won't be
exactly.
here. Yeah,
exactly. I guess that's a nice problem to have. Yeah. But the trade deadline approaches. It is next week. I expect that we will go much more in-depth on the trade deadline. Who knows? We might even have a trade by next week, although those things do seem to happen 5 minutes before.
So what time is it? 1:34? By 2 o'clock, there's probably going to be a move made.
Let's try not to do our podcast right at the trade deadline next week, because it will be completely irrelevant afterwards.
Live stream it.
I'll tell you this much. I'm going to be in Hawaii for the next week, and I'm not going to pay attention to any of this
okay,
nonsense.
Okay, good. So. Bear and I will handle it. You take your time off. Do I ever get time off? What
no.
is this?
No.
You don't get
all
2 weeks notice, you don't get time off.
That's what you get.
That must be it. We thank you so much for spending some time with us and checking out the podcast this week. I'm Steve Zinsmeister. That's Derek Monti, and Cody Fincher is back with us. It's the Ain't No Fang podcast at ArizonaSports.com and on the Arizona Sports app.
I'm going on vacation.